Welcome to Another Day Above Ground, a show for, by, and about baby boomers. It's the podcast for people who have no idea how to download a podcast. And now, here's your host, Dale Irvin.
Welcome back, my friends, to Another Day Above Ground. This is the podcast for baby boomers celebrating the fact that today is another day above ground. So we want to take advantage of all of them. So we're going to talk stuff about boomers, stuff that boomers like, stuff that boomers should be concerned about. And I'm going to do that with my two boomer partners. First, from the state of Indiana, the Aristotle of comedy, Mr. Tim Slagle.
Hey, Bernie Sanders announced that he's running for president today. That's the most anticipated announcement since the comeback of Murphy Brown.
And our other partner from beautiful Denver, Colorado, where today, what did you say, it's 7 degrees, is Carolyn Strauss.
Yeah, and I know all of my boomer friends are saying that they want to live in Arizona or Florida because it's just too cold here. What is that? Put on a sweatshirt, people.
Yeah, and go down to Arizona in mid-July and see how you like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I thought we would start this show with a light note, because that's one of the keys, I think, to being a baby boomer and living longer is daily laughter. And unfortunately, this one refers to a funeral in Ontario, Canada. A woman by the name of Sybil Hicks passed away. She was 81 years old, which means she was older than boomers, but she has two daughters who are baby boomers, and they decided to write her obituary in the first person. And it's just the funniest thing. I mean, it starts out, it hurts me to admit it, but I have passed away. I leave behind my loving husband, Ron, whom I affectionately refer to as a horse's ass. And the best one is that she's can't wait to be cremated because she'll finally have that smoking hot body she's always wanted.
So this is either a way to honor their mother or taking out a grudge.
It's funny. I have a deal with all of my friends that if, God forbid, I ever get sick and in a hospital bed, you know, I've been a plus size my whole life. You know, I was a plus size model in New York and everything. They have a deal that they're not allowed to unplug me until I weigh 120 pounds, take a picture, and then they can unplug me because I've never weighed 120 pounds in my life. So I love this woman. Love her.
A friend of my wife's passed away, and you know, she knew you know it was inevitable, and it was funny at her funeral. Everyone would go up to the coffin and they'd come back laughing. And had to go see why, and went up there. She had sent flowers to herself. She knew she was in hospice, so she sent flowers to herself. And the card on the bouquet said, "I miss me already."
I want to do something. Well, I don't want to be in a funeral home laid out. But if I did, I'd have a squirting flower in my lapel and give somebody else the responsibility of triggering it. I'd have my voice pre-recorded with a little thing. When they knelt down, it would break the beam. Say, "Hey, how you doing? Thanks for stopping by."
Hey, Dale, do you remember you and I did an interview several years ago for Speaker Magazine? And I asked you what you wanted it to say on your gravestone. Do you remember what you said?
Absolutely. In a little small type at the bottom, I wanted to say, "If you can read this, you're standing on my chest."
Love that. One of my favorite lines ever. Thank you.
Well, hopefully those days are far off for all of us. And in the meantime, one of the big concerns that baby boomers have is, okay, I'm getting ready to retire, but then what am I going to do? You know, and so they're starting to look at jobs, not only to keep them busy, but to give them the extra money that you need in retirement. Because we've heard, you know, that people don't have, baby boomers don't have enough saved up. So these are some ideas. And what do you think you would like to do, Carolyn? What would be your ideal retirement?
I love the one, you know, the life coach thing. You know, I've been doing executive coaching for years, but it's so funny on this list of jobs, it's become a life coach. You've got 60 or 70 years of life experience, become a life coach. Well, who's to say that your life experience is that good? I mean, who wants to listen to that, right? I mean, I got a lot of people that I know and I wouldn't take advice from them. It's like going to a hairdresser whose hair looks like not good. Why would you do that?
As my authority of being the drunkest person at Thanksgiving dinner, routinely, I will have you know that nobody really wants to hear about my life tips.
Exactly. I loved another one here, security guard. Yeah, I want my stuff to be guarded by somebody who can't get off a chair. I mean, come on.
You'll be in trouble as soon as my rascal's done charging.
But if you take that a step further and take security guard to an entrepreneur level, you work at a Walmart parking lot, and when somebody pulls in, you go, boy, that's a beautiful car. Shame anything would dent it while you're in the store. But for $5, I'll stay here and make sure.
I love this one. It says, deliver newspapers. Who wrote this article? Must be somebody over 70. Who gets newspapers anymore?
I do.
That makes it an easy job, doesn't it?
But it's so different
finish
now.
Finish your route in 5 minutes.
I mean, I delivered newspapers for like 10 years. And, you know, it was door to door and stuff. And now living in the suburbs, it's a guy that drives down the street in a beat up old car at 5 a.m. and throws them somewhere near your driveway. And so, you know, it's not nearly as hard. You don't have to go door to door to collect either, you know.
And then my favorite one was hold a pre-estate sale. It's like, well, I'll be dead soon, so come look at my stuff. And if you want it, I can use some cash. I mean, we used to call it a garage sale. Now it's a I'm almost dead, come buy my stuff sale, a pre-estate estate sale.
Well, here's the thing. There's actually a little bit of genius to that. Because when you have a garage sale, you get suburban moms looking for kids' clothes. However, when you have an estate sale, that's when you get the antique collectors. And the, right. I mean, an estate sale is it's much more panache to an estate sale. So I would recommend, rather than a garage sale, is always have estate sales. And make up a relative that lived in that home. You know, my twin sister passed away, and she had no kids, and I have to sell all her things.
We're going out of life sale, you know. And
there's a going out of life sale. That's correct.
Will you take a dollar for this? What? You're killing me here. Come on. It's bad enough.
Yeah, that's enough to buy 2 cans of dog food. Thank you very much.
Hey, this 8-track tape has been in my family for 40 years.
It's vintage, you fool. Vintage. Well, you know, we're all looking for second careers, and people say, you know, try things like being a life coach or whatever. But I know a lot of our baby boomer friends are thinking, you know, I should just write a book, because that to me seems like the best way to make billions of dollars. And you know, we've written books. And it's not that easy to make $1 billion unless you do what Carolyn and I do, and that's, of course, lie about it. But
So you think you want to write a book. You think you've got a story to tell, and as a baby boomer, you got time on your hands, so why not write a book? Well, I'll tell you why not, but better yet, we'll tell you how, because we brought in an expert to tell you all of the things about book writing. She has written, I believe, stop me, Wendy, 23 books. Is that correct?
Yeah, 31, but who's counting?
31 books. She wrote 6 overnight. And she's a great friend of mine. She is a wonderful literary agent. Please welcome to the show, Wendy Keller.
Yay! thank you so much having me.
Oh, please. This is it's a big deal for us. Probably not so much for you, but we really do appreciate it. Because, as you know, we're talking to baby boomers. Baby boomers think, hey, I can write a book. Why not? All these other monkeys out there have written books. What do I need to do, and how soon can I expect my check?
That's a pretty common question. Last night I was talking to my dad, and he's 74, and he said, yeah, I think I'm going to make money off a book, too. If you can write, I can write. I'm going to write a book. And I said, okay, Dad, what's it about? He said, well, it's going to be about my life. And I said, okay, who's interested in that? He said, well, you'll read it. I'm like, but I'm not going to pay you for it, Dad. So I was there for some of it. No thanks. But, it's a really big it's a really big decision to decide to write a book. There's a couple of things I see. A lot of people, who are our age or older decide they want to write a book because they want to leave this legacy, right? They want to tell their story and share their wisdom. That's fine. But if you're planning on getting paid, whether it's your professional experience or your life experience, that's a different matter. It's a different game if you want to actually make money off of it. Otherwise, go ahead. My ex-husband's grandmother wrote her life story, had it bound in these beautiful embossed leather books and gave a copy to everybody. They were like $35 a piece, and she wrapped them up. And, we threw ours away 15 or so years later. Nobody ever read it. Oops. At least we waited until after she died to throw it away. That was good.
Yeah, recycle. Always recycle.
Recycle. There you go. But the first, the real first decision is decide on your outcome. Do you really want to put the time, energy, and effort into writing a book that other people are going to pay you for? Or are you just looking for something to do in your free time? If it's the latter, you don't need any help. You just go do whatever the hell you want. And $300 to Amazon, you can get it printed on the internet, and who cares? But if you're looking to do something that's going to sell, it's kind of a little different. You have to pay some attention to the actual process. So
Wendy, what books are selling right now? So, I mean, unless you've worked in the White House recently, and then clearly you'll get a publishing deal, but if you're one of us who was lucky enough not to work in this White House, what books are selling? Is it all the how-to books? How to meet somebody in 20 minutes if you're over 50? I mean, what's selling?
So there are two categories of books. That's a great question. The first group is fiction, which means you made most of it up. And then the second book is not... Second section is nonfiction, which means, how to do something or politics or science or something like that. So my specialty is nonfiction, but I can tell you that fiction continues to sell, especially what's called genre fiction, which is you write fantasy or you write science fiction or you write historical romance or gothic romance or teen romance, whatever it is. So that kind of stuff is like an evergreen. If you want to make money in retirement and you have an actual gift for language, that's an evergreen area. It'll take you, if you're really, really good, it'll take you 100 to 150 hours to write a book. And the pay is around $3,000 to $5,000. Your book has a 90-day shelf life before it gets thrown out the back door and they put in a whole new batch of books. It's a great way to make a couple $1,000 a month because you're only putting in 100, 150 hours. It's a wonderful retirement plan. If you're interested in that, go to Romance Writers of America and read everything on their website. That's a great model. However, for the rest of you who want to write in nonfiction, which is my area of expertise, I have 18 New York Times bestsellers and over 1,900 deals around the world now. So I can tell you that nonfiction, what's selling is right now is books by supreme known experts with a platform. So my own 31st book was on how to build a platform, the ultimate guide to platform building with Entrepreneur Press. But the platform is really the critical component, even more than the content. If the publisher is considering an expert on, let's say sales, they're considering someone who says, hey, you know what? I was the VP of sales for major multinational corporation for 10 years, and I took the company to this profit level, and that's great, you might get a deal. Or if you said, I'm out there and I'm speaking on sales 20, 30, 40, 50 times a year, you might get a deal. But if you're just some guy who was really good at sales or some woman and you really liked it and, you built your own little company in sales, there's about a snowball's chance in hell you're going to get picked up because they only want books that are going to make them money, and that means make you money.
So step one, get a life.
Step two, write about it.
Yeah, then write about it. Because if you don't have one, no one's interested.
I could write a book about dating over 50, and it would be pure fiction. And then I hit both. But the and the fiction. It's all good.
So that's, you know, the model I use is to get a publisher, right? So, but there's another way to do this now. About 787,000 books are self-published every year now. And a lot of people who have some expertise and some interest in writing will write their subject matter, and they'll write a book, maybe not 40 or 50,000 words like you would expect a publisher to do, but they might write something short. They might write 20,000 words on their topic, and it's really, really, really specific. It's not just dating after 50. It's how to date the man of your dreams and find him within 30 days, or it's how to decide if this old geezer is the right one for you now that you're a geezer too, or whatever. And if you and if you create that and you put it out on Amazon and you're selling it for, you know, maybe $1.99, $3.99, that's the sweet spot, you will make some money. An ebook. Yeah, put it on. Yeah, put it on Amazon as an ebook. Don't worry about printing copies and putting them in your garage or your spare bedroom. Just put it out as an ebook. You could probably do 10 or 20 of them. It doesn't matter if you change your name for everyone. Most of my books are pseudonymous, which means they're not published under my personal name, even though they're with traditional, in some cases, big name publishers. But the point is, if you did that and you created a series of them, then you could see which one sells the best. And if you find out it's your dating books as opposed to your sales books, or your sales books compared to your parenting books or whatever it is, then you just start writing more in that category. If you have a sweet spot of 6 to 8 books that are selling on Amazon at a rate of 3 or more per month, which isn't very hard to do, then you will end up actually creating a reputation, because Amazon will watch those metrics and promote your other books simultaneously. That's a way to make money.
I've got a question, as far because you're talking about ebooks, yeah, and you're talking about traditional publishing.
Yeah.
What is the ratio right now of traditional publishing to ebooks? Is ebooks entirely stop the is like 50-50 now?
Oh,
or
according to industry statistics by R.R. Bowker, 42 to 48% of all books sold are sold digitally. That means in digital format. It's ebooks basically, and that's still the majority.
Through
the bricks and mortar or through physical. So physical books that, you know, paper books that you can pick up and actually hold. We are seeing a huge surge now in podcasts, that even podcasts that people pay for, and also in audiobooks. Audiobooks are making a huge resurgence in people's lives because more people have time in the car than they do at home to read.
Oh.
Yeah, fascinating, right?
Actually, my guess is
though, a lot of people aren't reading erotic fiction in the car because...
Well, you know,
you got to drive.
When they put the windshield wipers on the inside, that'll be.
But one point, you know, you brought up is self-publishing too, and which is a good way to go if you plan on selling them. But you have to have an arena or some sort of vehicle other than Facebook in order to sell a lot of books. Is that not correct?
Well, you know, a lot of books is relative. If you've self-published your book digitally, only digitally, on Amazon, which, again, costs $300, and you're selling them for $3.99, you know, or $2.99 or whatever, because that's really the range of price, now suddenly you can put them out there, and they kind of self-promote based on the genre. But if you want to bump that up, then some Facebook advertising or LinkedIn advertising, depending on your topic, you know, spread it out there. And there are a lot of things. We do a course, a lot of people do courses on how to promote books. So you do some of those things. It's not the same as if you had a physical book from Simon & Schuster, but some of it applies. So yeah, you can make money on it. And if you have 6 or 8 of them out there, you know, on with different names on them, on different topics that interest you, and they only took you a little while to write because they're half the size of a regular book. Who knows? I mean, there are people making tens of thousands of dollars a month. I have a friend who claims, I don't know for sure, that she's making $40,000 a month. She's got her book on BookBaby, her books on BookBaby, BookBaby.com, which isn't Amazon, BookBaby.com. But you might want to look at that. But yeah, a little promotion to differentiate yourself from all the other books makes a big difference because your price point is so low. There's a different strategy for promotion. If you're published by Simon & Schuster and you want to sell your books on Amazon, you're going to have to put a lot more attention on it. But if you've got 6 or 8 and they're $3.99 and, you know, you don't really have to live on that money, you could do very well.
Wendy, what do you think?
I'm guessing an important place that a lot of people scrimp when they self-publish is not hiring an editor. And that's...
You are a good cover designer.
Yes. Yes, yes.
People do judge your book by the cover.
So true. And here's the cool thing. There are a lot of cover designers on Fiverr, Fiverr.com. You can go to Fiverr, and for $20 or less, you can get a selection. What I always recommend clients do who are going to self-publish or who are building a course and need a cover for it, whatever, is go to Fiverr, hire three people, give them the exact same instructions, and then pick what you like best. So you're out $100. Who the hell cares? You got choices, right? So that's a great way to find a cover, and or go to 99designs.com, the number 99, the word designs.com, and run a contest with a bunch of designers to get a great cover for your product. That makes such a huge, huge difference. And the other thing is, do get an editor. Many people decide to put a religious tome hidden in the middle of their book on dating or in their book on business or something. They start talking about how if you pray hard enough, Jesus will bless your sales or whatever. Unless you notice and state that it's going to have that kind of message inside, it's Christian, or you want to talk about the aliens in the middle, really you need to change the title so that the people are warned, or you're going to have a lot of disgruntled customers. Use an editor, get a cover, and deliver what you say you're going to deliver. If you're going to talk about it in 90 days, you can find the love of your life, then freaking have a countdown for 90 days or have a plan that works. Month one, do this. Month two, do that. Don't give a misleading cover thinking you're being cute. Don't try to come with swim with the sharks without being eaten alive, because that only worked once.
And you want your customers fully gruntled.
Exactly. Well, Wendy, I can't thank you enough for joining us. And for those of you out there who love what Wendy had to say and are mildly amused by what I have to say, Wendy and I wrote a book together.
Yes,
it's one
did.
Of those where she used a phony name because she was embarrassed. But my real name... Damn it,
kind of like when we talk about this podcast with you, Dale.
The Everything Barbecue Cookbook. And not only is it a good cookbook, it's been printed in French. So there's some poor sap over in French reading a cookbook written by a comic and a literary agent.
I was a vegan at the time we wrote it. I had to write a whole section on smoking meat. It was disgusting.
Well, that could be Carolyn's book too, actually.
Smoking meat. There you go.
There you
smoking
go. Over
meat 50. In 30 days.
Meat over 50. These are a lot of great ideas, folks, and you just need to come up with some of your own. But, Wendy, thank you so much for being with us. Hopefully we can touch base with you from time to time when we have another publishing or even a business question, because you've been so helpful. But thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Bye-bye, everyone.
Well, that was a great tip, you know, and obviously to write a book, you need to have maybe an experience. Write about what you know. And I spent a lot of time on cruise ships when I was working as a comedian, but now baby boomers and seniors are spending all their time on cruise ships because they found it to be cheaper than an assisted living home.
And you don't have to wait till 5 o'clock to get the early bird buffet.
It's 24/7, man. No, but wait. So a girlfriend of mine, so maybe it's not for us boomers yet, because I'm in denial about being a boomer still. But but I was talking to a girlfriend of mine just this past weekend, and her mom is originally from Switzerland, and her mom's in her 80s, and she does not want to go into an assisted living place here. So we were looking into places in Switzerland to put her. It's 14,000 euros a month for the nice place in Switzerland. Okay, that's like $180,000 a year. You can live on a cruise ship with full medical, full food, other than your alcohol, which, you know, might be a big expense for some of us, Dale. But you can live on a cruise ship for $180,000 a year. Why would you go into an assisted living place?
You know, that's a good point, Carolyn. You should look into that because, you know, there are cruises in Egypt. And you could literally live in the Nile.
Yeah.
That's a horrible old joke.
But well-timed. Very well-timed.
That was great, Tim. Thanks. I was thinking that you just, you know, then I could just be buried in a pyramid, which would be perfect. And somebody, you know, since I wasn't anybody's mummy, maybe someday I could be.
But if you spent your retirement on a cruise ship when you wanted to go, you dive off and it's going to make the news. So there you go.
Cheapest burial ever. She was buried at sea on purpose on her own terms.
But when I used to work ships, I met several people like that. Say, I live here now. This is, you know, I get my mail periodically when we go into port, and this is where I live. So that's always an option if you.
God for direct deposit.
You know, and then there are destination weddings. This is destination endings. And you just have your friends come and visit you on the cruise ship.
Ooh, that's a good idea. And then when you do go, you have like a Viking funeral. They put you in a rowboat, cast it out to sea, and set it on fire. Oh,
perfect.
Yeah. They can make a special little wood boat
for
that.
Drop one of those plastic lifeboats.
The cruise of your life. Really? Literally.
We don't want plastic lifeboats. It pollutes the ocean. No, man, we want a wood one that's going to disintegrate. Come on, Tim. Environmentally appropriate. I like Dale's idea of the Viking wood boat. Set it on fire. No environmental impact at
plastic's
all.
Plastic's easier to burn. That's kind of my point.
Not like it's going to hurt us. Hell with it.
If I choke a turtle, but
stop, guys, turtles, stop. They get to live to be like 100 years old if we don't mess them up.
Well, and why should they live that old? We're not gonna. We should
be. If I go down, I'm taking a couple turtles with me.
Are you questioning divine design? Come on.
Anyhow, they make a great soup. That's all I know. But
I didn't know they could cook.
It tastes like chicken. But I want to close out this session with some more talk about money and how, you know, all the different things that are out there are really affecting baby boomers. You know, like this thing, the digital wallet. I don't understand. My wallet is made out of leather. It folds in two. Got my driver's license, couple pictures, and some cash. Why do we have digital? What do you know what that is, either one of you?
Well, I know Uncle Sam's always trying to give my wallet a digital.
Yeah, digital wallet. It's so easy. I mean, the driver's license thing, I don't understand. I mean, other than having a picture of it on your phone, which I don't know if they accept that if you get pulled over or something. But the digital wallet is you walk up to Starbucks and instead of giving them money, you swipe your phone by their little reader and $17 comes off your PayPal for a coffee. That's how digital wallets work, right?
but how do you know somebody in the back room's not adding a couple cents onto each one of those? Because you're not going to go through and look at, you know, 5 million entries to see if they match you.
I was on a flight this weekend and I checked in my bag and they said, would you like me to print a boarding pass? And I always just have it with the boarding pass on the phone. And I said, oh, what the heck? That way I can put my phone away and you shut it off. Don't have to deal with it. Don't have to fumble for it. So I printed up. And I noticed when I'm in line at the when I was boarding the flight, I was the only one with a paper boarding pass. So that portion of the digital wallet is, I mean, we're all already there. Everyone just set their phone down. And then Gramps pulled out this slip of paper.
It was probably me. I always take a printed boarding pass. Always.
You know what? But here's the thing about the printed boarding pass. When your phone dies, because it's a Galaxy S7, which is what I'm working with kids. Yes, I am like four versions back. But my phone doesn't hold a charge for more than 2 hours anymore. And if I'm sitting at the airport and my flight is delayed, I got to tell you, there have been times when I've gotten up there and the battery is so low that the picture is so low that they can't see the boarding pass. So, you know what? A paper backup isn't a bad thing. And oh my God, I'm a boomer. Just kill me.
Oh,
God, guys. You're killing me.
It hits some of us harder than others. Well, if you're a boomer, let me ask you this. There's a couple of statistics on boomers and money. For instance, 53% of baby boomers, if they find money laying on the street, they will pocket it rather than try and find the rightful owner.
I no longer pick up change. That's if I see a penny, I figure that is 100 deep knee bends for a dollar, and that is below my pay scale.
Not to mention the bacteria.
So, yeah, it's I don't pick up anything less than a quarter, and even then, a lot of times I won't. It hurts too much.
I don't know
how you. Here's the thing, though. I mean, is it digitally marked? Like, how can you tell? I mean, if you see $20 on the ground. Okay, so I was in Australia and I had $100 in my back pocket. And like an idiot, I put my phone in my back pocket. And at some point walking around, I pulled my phone out to take a picture. I get back to the hotel, reach in my pocket. Somebody in Australia is walking around with $100 US.
US?
Wow. Yes. So, you know, that was just stupid. But how are they going to find me? I didn't write my name on it. It was not a magic trick where I put my name on the card and they pulled it out.
Well, actually,
it
should be pretty easy to find. It's just an Aussie with $100. It's U.S.
That's true.
I get millions of those little return address stickers from all kinds of charities. I just put one of those on the $100 bill. So if I lose it, you know, then at least they'll be guilty for not trying to find me.
Should you ever do an experiment with that? We really should try that. We should all try that. We should all take like $5 bills, put our little return address stickers on it. First of all, see if we can spend them, if they'll actually take it in a store with a return address sticker on it. And then drop a few around at different airports and see if they end up getting back to us. That would be an interesting experiment.
Didn't Dobie do something like that, Tim?
Wrote
his address in the margin.
Comic Dobie Maxwell used to put his name and phone number and address on dollar bills and say if you get this, send me, drop me a note or something like that, and the Treasury got in trouble with him. The Treasury finally called him up and said, don't do that anymore. And he said, is it illegal? And they said, it doesn't matter. Just don't do that anymore.
Well, if you do it for a bunch of dollars, and if you write for a good time call, you might get them back.
Well, all of the letters he got did come from strippers. So, you know, that's what happens. Oh, and here, 22% of baby boomers, almost a quarter of us, admit to making purchases behind their partner's back, and they don't see the need to let them know about it.
Yeah, except when the partner says, okay, there's another box from Amazon on the porch.
Or
you
make
have to run home before they get home. You got to get home before them. That's
or you make the mistake of using a credit card, and you're not really the one that watches the mail. And finally, it's a 16% of baby boomers bend the truth when it comes. This, pay attention to this, Carolyn. Bend the truth when it comes to their age, but the other way, just to get a discount.
Oh heck no!
I thought about that once. I was having lunch, and they said we have, you know, like a 20% senior discount, and I said, you know, that $2. That I'm going to save is not going to be worth spending the rest of the day thinking that I look that old.
That's what I was thinking. Nobody would believe me, guys, if I told them that I was older than I am. The shock on their faces, they'd never believe me. You're laughing too hard at that, Tim. That is not okay.
No. I'm just laughing. It's if it wouldn't be shocked, how awful that would be for you.
Yeah, this but is it, all just fun.
It's not the first time we've done it. We did it back when we were 18, saying we were 21 to buy liquor. We're good at age lying, you know. Anyhow, my friends, that pretty much wraps it up for another session of Another Day Above Ground. We hope that you tell your friends about this podcast. Please take the time to leave us a review and like us wherever you see us, because we're really all very, very insecure, and we like to be liked. But any final words, my friends?
Hey, I'll be in Danbury, Wisconsin this weekend.
Okay, Danbury.
On purpose?
The St. Croix Casino.
Oh, cool. All right. Carolyn, how about you?
I am going to write Another Day Above Ground. We're going to write the book. I am committed that we are going to have an ebook done sometime for all of us to participate in.
Boy, you get some self-publishing tips, and it just lights the fire underneath you.
That was as lit as I can get.
Yeah. Dale and I have to show you how sometime.
And I'm going to spend the rest of the day going to the dentist, which has always got to be, you know, even more fun than a colonoscopy. And I'll tell you all about that next week. But please remember, live every day. It's another day above ground.
And that's it for Another Day Above Ground. For Dale, Tim, and Carolyn, I'm Farad Muhammad. Thanks for listening.